Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we're going to have part two of our interview with Steve Brisbois, who was a professional bodybuilder in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And we had part one of our interview with Steve last week, where we talked about how he turned pro by winning the Canadian Championships as a lightweight competitor. He was the only one to ever turn pro by winning a national championship as a lightweight. He was the only one in any country. So that was pretty amazing. And then Steve turned pro and competed in the Night of the Champions and the Arnold Classic. So part two of our interview with Steve today, we will pick up where he talks about the drug testing they did for the first Arnold Classic, where they did the drug testing, which was 1990. And that was Steve's first Arnold Classic. And he did very well there. And then we'll talk about him competing at some other pro shows, including the Mr. Olympia in 1992 with Dorian Yates won. And then Steve went on the Grand Prix tour right after that. And he got to witness, unfortunately, the death of Momo Benaziza. He was right there when it happened. So he's going to talk extensively about that. So that was what prompted Steve to quit competing. It's a shock of that. So a very, very interesting interview we've got coming up with Steve Brisbois in a second. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. Merry Christmas to everybody out there. We've got Christmas coming up later this week, so I hope everybody gets a chance to celebrate with their loved ones and really have a good time for the holiday. I am going out to Chicago this weekend to celebrate with my family. So I'm leaving early Thursday and I'll be out there for about a week and I get to see my family and my friends. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. We have to put up with the cold weather, of course, but I can do it for a week. I can handle for 1 week and then that's it. Then I got to come back. What else is going on? Oh, I did my photo shoot finally. So I've been dieting probably the last 4 months. I was trying to figure out when I started my diet. I think it was around the end of August. And it took me about 4 months to really get lean. I am now 58 years old. I'll be 59 next March. So I wanted to see what I look like. And I look pretty good. Got some good photos taken. Did a photo shoot yesterday at Powerhouse Gym in Tampa where I train. And, you know, always hard on myself. But I thought I looked pretty good for my age. And I think the plan now is I'm just going to try and stay at a leaner body weight at this point in my career. No more bulking up or gaining too much weight in the off season. Just try to stay lean and maybe try to peak twice a year instead of once every 3 years, which is what I've been doing. So maybe try to peak in the summertime and then again in around the holidays like I did this time. So we'll see how that goes because I think I can still be strong and still have some really good workouts without gaining too much fat. So I'm going to just try and bring my waist up about maybe an inch or maybe an inch and a half at the most and try to really keep it under control. I think that'll be better for keeping the skin tighter when I do get ripped up again. And I think it just looks better overall to be leaner, especially in the business I'm in, which is training, online training and fitness and everything else. So that is the plan. Next week, I don't know if we're going to have a show or not. I hope we do. I contacted Jerry Branham about doing our end of the year shows that we've been doing for the last few years. So if you're new to the podcast, what we usually do at the end of the year is, instead of reviewing the year in review, like a lot of bodybuilding podcasts do, since we're talking about the golden age of bodybuilding or bodybuilding history, we go back 50 years, 40 years, and 30 years. So since this is the end of 2021, we would go back to 1971, 1981, and 1991. And I always have Jerry Branham on the show to go over that with me, because he's got a lot of great stories. He was at a lot of these competitions. So we will do that again. And I'm hoping to start that next week. But I don't know if I can get Jerry on the phone to interview him before I leave for Chicago. So we'll see if that happens or not. If not, it'll be the week after. So we'll see what happens. I did get one email from last week's show, which was Steve Brisbois, part one. It says, "Hey, John, I really enjoyed part one of the Steve Brisbois interview. I loved his enthusiasm and great attitude, which shone through. I was always a fan, not least as he is the same height as me. So it was inspirational growing up to see what symmetry, proportion, and presentation can achieve. I write as a particular fan of 80s bodybuilding, which I love to reminisce and learn about on the podcast. I was looking back through a copy of Muscle and Fitness from January 83, and I found an article by Rick Wayne about the future for champions in the 80s. What made me think were the photos that accompanied the article. Bertel Fox, Danny Padilla, Rory Liedemeyer, Tom Platz, Albert Beckles, Lance Strayer, to name a few. These champions all had physiques that looked incredible, individual, and in some way attainable, in a way that today many do not, at least in the open division. Thank you for keeping the stories of the gyms, the contests, and the champions alive from the golden era. Best wishes, Mike." All right. Thank you, Mike. And if anybody out there wants to email me, you can always do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I'll read your email on the air if you want me to. And I also got a chance to watch Dream Big, which is the movie, the new documentary by Mark Martinez. Mark sent me a link to watch it, and I got a chance to watch it. And it was really, really good. So I will be writing a review of that. And I want to thank Mark on the air for sending that to me. I was really overjoyed to get to watch that, since I was not able to go out to California this year to see it at one of the film festivals. But Mark is really plugging along. He said Pete Kromkowski might try to get some people together to finance the film, so it could be released, or it could be on a streaming service maybe. So hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, it'll be out there for all of us to see. Mark even put a picture of me in there, because he was interviewing Wayne Galash from Australia, and he had a picture of me and Wayne together. So I made the movie. So that was really cool to see. When we get done with our interview with Steve Brisbois, I'm going to read another article. I always do this at the end of our shows. If you guys got any articles or any topics you want me to read, please email me and let me know, and I'll see if I got an article about that. This one, I'm going way back again. I've been reading some old ones from the late 60s, early 70s. And this one is from Muscle Builder Power, July 1969. So in the issue before this, they covered the Mr. Olympia, the 1968 Olympia, which was also held with the America and the Mr. World. And that year, of course, Sergio won his second Olympia and Frank Zane won the America. And I believe Chuck Sipes won the Mr. World. So this is right after that. This was the issue after that, July 69. And they cover the 1968 Mr. Universe, IFBB Mr. Universe. And this, of course, was the historic event where Frank Zane beat Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this was in Miami Beach, Florida. So it was written by Dick Tyler, who was one of the main writers for Muscle Builder Magazine back then. So I'm going to read this article as soon as we get done with our interview with Steve Brisbois. All right. So I think that's all I got, guys. So enjoy our interview here with Steve Brisbois. Like I said, we pick up on part two, talking about the drug testing for the Arnold Classic. Here we go. A few people failed.
Yeah, and at that time, I placed seventh, right?
Yes.
It was my first show, and I was, John, believe it or not, I was drug-free for Arnold's for about 6 months.
Okay.
And I placed seventh in the contest.
They said you got fifth.
Yeah, I got fifth. After those two guys got caught, I bumped up to fifth.
Oh, okay. Who got caught? Oh, Samir and Sean.
Samir and Sean were ahead of me, so.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I saw a caption of Sean Ray today on Instagram with him and Laura Crivell when they won that in 1990. It's like, sorry, Sean. Win officially.
Right.
But no, I ended up placing fifth, and it was really interesting because the next year I was invited back and I ended up placing sixth in the Arnold Classic. And in 90, 91 and 92, I ended up going back again and placing fifth again.
Now that Arnold was the Arnold was different than the World Championships you did because they didn't get the test back until after the show was over, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I got a call from Wayne D'Amelio, I don't know, a couple of weeks later or something like that, saying I already heard from Bob Kennedy from Muscle Mag. And so he calls me up at home and I said, Wayne, good to hear from you, man. He goes, oh, I bet you know why I'm calling you. I said, oh yeah, man. My check.
Yeah, I felt bad for Mike Ashley because he never got awarded on stage. You know, the
that's right, because he won the contest.
Yeah, right.
But yeah.
So how did they did the urine test for everybody, and then they just didn't get the results. They didn't do it in time to get the results before the show.
Exactly. They weren't prepared for that, which didn't make any sense. I mean, here we are in the universe in 86, we're able to do it in Tokyo.
Right. That's what doesn't make sense. 4 years later, they did it.
Yeah.
Right.
That was kind of bizarre how they did that. I think they thought maybe I was under the impression nobody was going to get caught because they weren't going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
But you could tell that some of the guys that were used to doing the steroids were a little softer.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, John, I got harder.
Hmm.
My body adapted much better without them.
Yeah.
And that's why I was very careful in how I used them in the past, man. But
so you didn't use anything for 6 months before the show?
6 months before the contest.
Yeah. Okay.
And what happened, though, was a bit of a backlash with people complaining and even the judges realized that, look, this is not going to work. So they just completely got out of the way, man.
Yeah. What did you think most of the other guys did? Do you think they did the same thing where they back off? Not probably 6 months, maybe just a few weeks.
I think a lot of them knew what to do prior.
Yeah.
And I had no knowledge on how to even evade that. So for me, I just got off it completely. I was going to, I was invited to the show, which is great. So I'm going to Arnold.
Yeah.
Drug free.
Yeah.
You know, and I still held my own. As a matter of fact, if you look at those shots from 1990, you can see that, you know, the difference in our physiques back then and what they are today is night and day, man. But it was just more flow, more class and everything to it, more. So
right.
I came pretty tight and hard and like that, how I looked on that, man.
Yeah.
But
a lot of them probably did what you said with Ben Johnson. They probably just avoided the oil-based stuff and they did the water-based stuff and then they were able to get off it.
And a lot of these guys were a lot smarter and they knew how to freaking pass these tests, I suppose, because I didn't know what the heck was going on, man. But
What do you think of Mike Ashley? Do you think, you know, he claims to be drug-free for his whole life? Do you think he was, in your opinion?
You know, on the record, no.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe that for the life of me. And Mike, with all due respect, and if he ever sees this and says something, so be it.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. Super, super individual. He lives down south here in Florida.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
And, but I totally don't believe he was drug free. I mean, my personal opinion, I'm sure I'm not the only guy who thinks that way. And you can tell how people look with their hardness and stuff like that, John. I mean, it's kind of, hey man.
Well, you saw him in the Night of the Champions too, when he got second.
Exactly. So for me, there was no doubt, man. He was very gifted. I got to tell you, he was gifted. But if you think about it, John, I went to, when I was doing the roids back then as a pro, I go to find out that a lot of these guys are doing, you know, whatever milligrams they were using back then, they're spending an average of, I think, $7,000, $8,000 for a cycle 3 to 4 months before a contest, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what my understanding was back in the day. That was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And my cycle, believe it or not, I was only spending about $700, $800 on steroids for that whole time.
Yeah.
And because again, I was very nervous to take more.
Yeah.
And now I know these days, these guys are on massive amounts.
Yeah. Were guys taking growth hormone back then, Steve, or had that started yet?
It just started.
Okay.
It started to the point where even I started to look for some, and I'm glad I didn't get into that because I don't know what would have happened. And I know some of the guys are big into it today from what I'm understanding. And I also, but the insulin is huge today with these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the growth hormone, from what I understand, started around the 90s. I was just wondering, like, if it was in the 80s also. I heard rumors that they started in the late 80s.
Yeah, yep. It was around at my time. I knew some guys that were getting it.
Yeah.
Very, very few. A lot of us were looking, and we were starting to get contacts, and I thought I had contacts and things like that. But kind of glad I didn't. I never wanted to really. I'm glad I never messed with it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you were successful just from having a very aesthetic physique. You didn't have to be that big. I mean, you needed a little enhancement, but you didn't need to be, you know, 200 pounds or anything, you know.
Right, like Momo. I'm 5'4", John. Momo's 5'2", and he weighed 200 pounds.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget how thick and massive he was for that time, you know.
Well, you got to remember, he and I would attribute to him and Dorian setting the standards to where they are today.
Yeah.
And even Dorian, I think, well, obviously, I think he even admits that he was better in his first couple Olympians. And then he just got more.
And Ronnie too. Ronnie, you ask Ronnie today, Ronnie won 8 Olympias, and you ask him which one did he look the best in. He said the first one, where he weighed like 247. Yeah.
I don't know why they decided to go that route. And
yeah, I think they feel the pressure from the judges.
You got to blame the judges for this.
Yeah, yeah.
You really do, because you're giving something to somebody that's just not part of our sport anymore. I mean, look at Rami. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is just a big block.
Yeah, yeah, right. Big Rami, yeah.
They don't flow anymore, John. They don't have that set. They don't have that classy look, man.
Right, right.
It's just, to me, it's not bodybuilding. It's just, and yet the audience loves it. These guys are massively famous all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because having these massive muscles, and it's like, good Lord.
Yeah.
Where's the look? Where's the actual good look, man?
Yeah, right, right. So in 1990, you didn't do the Olympia that year, right?
Nope.
You would have had to have qualified, right?
Matter of fact, I think.
Did you qualify by taking fifth?
I did. I qualified in 90, if I'm not mistaken. Uh-huh. But I hurt my shoulder and I couldn't compete.
Oh, okay. Because that was the other drug tested show in 1990.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I forgot all about that, and because I was injured for that show. It would have been my second Olympia. So as you know, I competed in 2 Olympias.
Yeah,
but would have been 3. But either way, I was devastated. I couldn't compete in that back then, man.
Yeah, yeah, I'll bet. And Mike Ashley, unbelievable, didn't do that show. That was the only drug tested Olympian. He didn't do that show.
Yeah, I forgot why.
I think he had an injury too. I think it was his knee. I think he had a knee operation. Remember, he had those bad knees from when he was doing paratrooping stuff? Yeah.
Yep. It's true.
So, 91, you go back to the Arnold Classic and you got 6th, and that wasn't drug tested. So, that's a great place.
Yeah. Those are probably my better accomplishments as a pro, doing well in the Arnold Classic.
And you beat Rich Gaspari and Robbie Robbins.
Yep.
How's that?
Believe it or not, John, it was when I first beat Rich. Okay. First of all, Rich Gaspari didn't really say too much to me, man. He's like, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
He's just, don't get me wrong. Rich is a great guy. I know him today. We've had some conversations back then. I saw him several years ago here in Orlando.
Yeah.
And we were having a conversation, talking family, man. It was pretty funny. But it wasn't until I beat him where finally Rich came along. It's like, he started having, you know, talking to him. Hey, okay,
yeah.
Rich.
Yeah.
Yes, I exist in your world, man.
That had to be tough for him because he won the first Arnold Classic in 89. And then 2 years later, he gets 7th. So,
I know my ability and I know what I had, John, to become better at it. And I know that in 92, when I walked away, that I left a lot on the table.
Yeah.
But there was other things in my life that were promises were made business-wise and stuff, where I was with the Hot Stuff Empire.
Yeah.
And that blew up in my face with a lot of different things, man. But there are some regrets a little bit after the fact. But, you know, I can't look back and have that. I just got to say that I made the decision not to compete. It was my decision. It was my choice. And knowing that, I wish I would have done a couple more years.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, you know, I was getting to know Milo Sarcha really good, too. We've had some we've been to several places together in contests and that, man. And, you know, and he was kind of the talk of the town in bodybuilding back then. Not that he was, you know, this great, phenomenal physique, but he was so consistent and he was always getting better and he was in shape all year round.
And he was doing so many shows. He did so many shows.
But I go to find out this guy is brilliant, man. He studied to a T. That's why he's one of the best coaches today in the world.
Right, right.
He knows his stuff, man.
Before we talk about 92, which was your last year of competing, I want to mention the Ironman, which was the first Ironman in 1990. And I was at that show in California, so I got to see it in person. And you got seventh. And as you mentioned, you had this great routine to Alana Miles, right? Black Velvet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So where'd you come up with the idea for that routine? Because I remember that routine was awesome.
I used to listen to a lot of her music. I loved her music. I just, that song kept coming into my head as I'm working out the gym and posing in the mirror and thinking, okay, I got to think of a song. I want something to flow, something like just to come out there and nobody even knows or hears a lot of. And I picked that song. And the reason I remember that show for that, thanks for bringing it up, is that when I went to the Ironman, John...
Baylor?
John Baylor, yeah. So I had to pay my own way to that contest.
Yeah.
So I was allowed to go to it as a pro. I was allowed to compete, but I was one of those bodybuilders. Yeah, you can come to the show, but, you know, we're not paying for your room and your all that stuff. So, all right. Yeah. So when I ended up going to the show, placing seventh, John Baylor came at the show and said, Steve, I'm going to reimburse you for everything that you paid for because you did a fantastic job there, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, and I beat some big names too. And so he's like, so that was a real good milestone for these guys to notice that back in the day, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember when you did that routine, you were moving to the music, which was like really unusual. And the audience loved it. It was great.
Yeah, I had that little hip movement right there.
Right, the hip movement, right.
I'll never forget that. I had that thing with my head.
Like, yeah.
Wow, what a memory. I can't remember that. I can't believe I remember that, man.
Yeah. Well, you said Lee Labrador was in the audience and he complimented. You heard it.
Yeah.
He did a great compliment.
I had, matter of fact, he was sitting with, my girlfriend was in front of him.
Okay.
And that's when after the show, she told me that, you know, Lee Labrador said that you got one of the greatest physiques up there and your routine was fantastic.
Wow.
And she said that, man, if I would have come in a little bit tighter, Lee was saying, if I come in a little bit tighter for that show, I would have won it all.
No shit. Wow.
So that's why I really thought I had some really good things going on. And I and I know at 92, when I started seeing things happening, I thought for sure that I should have placed top 10 in the Olympia. I really believe I did. Hmm. But you know how that goes, you know, you got your judges and it's for me to beat Lou Ferrigno was kind of, you know, he's twice my height, man.
Yeah. Right. Well, at the Arnold that year, the Arnold was your contest, man. Cause you got like fifth and 90. Sixth, 91, and then you got fifth again in 92. The year
92.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now you're in the top five. You're in the pose down.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wild going out there with these guys, man. I felt good. I think there was a lot more respect with some of the guys after that because, you know, I'm the little guy, man. I'm the littlest guy ever until Muhammad came along, obviously. Muhammad was massive, though, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the reason, obviously, as you know, the reason him and I got along well, because he only spoke French.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So being French, I had to translate everything for him, all that stuff. But
When did you first meet him, Steve?
I met him the first time I went to Budapest, Hungary. So Ben Weider brought us to Budapest, Hungary, in I think it was 87.
Okay.
We had gone there to promote Weider products, man.
Okay.
And they brought myself, Ron Love, and a couple of other guys, man. And that was very strange because you'll never believe what they did to us, man. The Weiders promised us, all of us, $3,000 plus all expenses.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid to say the story. We got there and they gave us 3,000 Hungarian dollars.
Which is what?
$50 American back in the day.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, Ron Love told me that same story. I interviewed
him. No kidding.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah,
we were there and we couldn't believe that they gave us. You got to be kidding me.
$50.
$50, 3,000 Hungarian. He said, but it just, how they deceived us is what gave me, I had no respect for the Weeders after that, which was sad because they control the IFBB, but
yeah,
I didn't really have a lot of respect. And I met Joe a couple of times. He brought me out to dinner, myself, Ranel Jami, after the Arnold Classic one time. Mm-hmm. He wanted to sign me up under his, under the Weeder name. And at that time, I was with Hot Stuff. But okay. I didn't have an obligation because I wasn't really under contract. But I felt obligated because Hot Stuff was owned by my former father-in-law.
Okay. What was his name? So, Steve?
Tom Sciola.
Oh, Tom Sciola. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
And
so you were married to Tom's daughter.
I married. Yep. We were married 28 years.
28 years. Wow. No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. Divorced now, unfortunately.
Okay. Wow. That's a long happened. Marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. It's it was pretty. It's been a little bit of a challenge for the whole family for us to have gone through that, but it is what it is. Life moves on.
Did you get divorced recently, Steve?
Yep.
Okay. Wow. Sorry to hear that.
But it's, we have seven kids together.
Seven kids. No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. No kidding.
I know people keep asking us, are they all of ours? Yeah, they are, man.
How old are your kids?
Well, we have, my three girls are 9, 12, and 14.
Okay.
And I've got my three, and then there's a big gap because we had three miscarriages in between, unfortunately.
Oh,
but
wow.
Then I have a 23-year-old son who has a baby. I have a 25-year-old. Who has a little boy and a baby on the way. And I have a 27-year-old who has two kids and one on the way. And wow. That's my boys. And then my oldest daughter, she sings all over Central Florida. She's probably one of the top performers in this area.
No kidding. Wow.
She's a musician. But yeah, so.
That's awesome. So you're a grandfather.
Yeah, great kids, man. I got four grandchildren, two on the way.
That's great.
I mean, four grandchildren, two on the way.
So when did Tom start Hot Stuff? What year was that?
I think it was about 3 to 4 years prior to me meeting him.
Okay.
It was like the mid-80s or something like that, I think.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I came down here to Orlando. I live on the outskirts of Orlando in the Windermere, Winter Garden area.
Okay.
I came down here to meet him because Wayne D'Amelio told him that there was this athlete that, he was looking for some athlete. I was an up and coming pro. And I went down to meet him here, came down here and one thing led to another and stayed here, met his daughter and got married and all that stuff. But
so you moved from Canada way back then, huh?
Yep. Oh, 30 years. 30 years.
Yeah. For some reason, I was always thinking you were still in Canada that whole time.
No. Too cold.
Yeah, no. I'm from Chicago. I know. I understand.
Right.
So let's go back to 92 because that was you did the Olympia. That was the first year Dorian won. That was in Finland. And you qualified for that by getting top five at the Arnold, right? So you were qualified for the Olympia that year.
Yep.
And you only got 11th. But that was a stacked lineup, of course, as it always is. And you felt you could have did a little better, huh?
I believe I thought it was top 10. I thought because just watching everything and even going back and seeing some of the pictures in that. But you know how bodybuilding is, man. It's –
yeah,
very subjective, and you got a lot of different judges there, and I was climbing the ladder, and
well, it seems like the Olympia always seems to go for the bigger guys,
Yeah, and sometimes they like to tell you got to pay your dues, which I don't like that statement.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if the best guy on stage at that time, it's vote him in. But I mean, this is the guy; he's the best on stage.
It's a contest.
But, that was happening, but I realized I was getting really close with a lot of the athletes and the judges that got to know them better and stuff. And
and
it was a bit of a camaraderie. It's almost like you have to have a bit of a camaraderie with some of the judges. I don't know. It was like that for us back then a little bit.
Yeah.
And because they'd give you pointers, I mean, there was a couple of guys in New York. Steve still judges at IFBB, and he used to tell me, just coming in a little bit tighter, a little sharper.
Yeah.
I guess at that time, when you're 11th in the world, and then the shows in the Grand Prix, I'm like, after that, there's six shows after that, which I was in the top six, top seven each show, fourth a couple of times.
Okay.
So, you know, at the time, I consider myself one of the top 10 bodybuilders in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I really thought I had some good things coming. And, you know, it's I'll never forget that night, Porter and I. I made a decision. Probably, you know, I think it was the right decision at the time.
Yeah.
I had a chance to come back a couple of years later, and I didn't take it. And I just, life moves on, man.
Yeah, yeah. So when you did the Olympia, a lot of people were making a big deal about Lou coming back, Lou Ferrigno, because he was finally making a comeback after, since 1975. That was his last contest. So what was all the hype surrounding that at the show? Was there a lot of hype around that?
Yeah. And again, you got to realize, too, that Lou had the fake calves.
Yeah, yeah, the implants, they look terrible.
And what I didn't like is he got paid, from what I understand, Joe Weider paid him $250,000 just to come up to the show, come to the show.
Holy cow.
That was the story going around. If I'm wrong, then somebody gave me the wrong information. But that's what I was hearing back in the day, man, because, you know, here's Lou Ferrigno making a comeback after 17 years. It's like, wow.
How was the show being in Finland? Was that weird because it wasn't in the United States?
The weirdest part was this. So we're in Finland, and we're at the show is being held at a skating rink.
Yeah, an ice rink, right.
Yeah. And the thing, it was a professional hockey game going on early afternoon.
Right.
And so they had, the hockey game was over, they set the whole stage up, and you know, in these skating rinks, they put stuff on the ice, these platforms down, and put the chairs out and all that.
Yeah. Right.
Get the audience ready for sitting up in the stands. And
so guys have the prejudging before the hockey game?
No, it was after.
Wow. So what time was
that? We were up in the stands posing, and that's where, I don't know if you heard the story. So everybody's down on the ice rink, sitting on the seats and everything like that. And we're downstairs in the dressing rooms, and there's water all over the place because, you know, the ice melts and comes down and all these collies and stuff like that. And here we are with our posing shorts on, walking around, and water everywhere. We have to step certain places, and we had to walk up this platform to get to the top of the stage, and you're walking down again onto the stage. I don't know if you ever saw the 1992 Olympia. Yeah. Take a look.
I saw it. Yeah, yeah. Everybody's coming down. Ferrigno fell, right?
Forms.
Ferrigno fell, didn't he? Coming down the stairs.
Well, yeah. So he goes up to pose, right? So he walks up the stage that we can't see because we're backstage and we're all the way down. So we couldn't even see the other pose. And so Lou is going up there, comes down, you know, he's doing his posing, and he comes back, and there's myself and Porter Cottrell standing right there, down on the behind the stage where the stairs come down, all these platforms. Right. So we see Lou up at the top. And Lou is waving to the crowd, and he turns around to go back down, and he misstepped and he fell down the stairs.
All the stairs?
All of them. And these weren't regular stairs. These were platforms built up for us to walk up.
Yeah, it looked like big steps. Yeah, I saw that.
To the stage and that. So Porter and I were there. We caught him right before he hit the ground. I was like, oh, damn, look at this guy.
Holy 300
pounds, man. And so he got a big slice in the back of his leg. I think he needed several stitches. He had to go to the hospital.
Jeez.
And
was this at the night show, Steve, or the prejudging?
This was the night show.
The night show, okay. So had to wait till the hockey rink or the hockey game was over with, and then you had to
go to prejudging.
Then you did the prejudging. What time was the prejudging then?
I can't remember. I think it was early afternoon. I think maybe I should say about 2 or 3. The hockey game was early.
Okay. And then what time was the night show?
The night show was later on, like 8 o'clock or something, I think.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, we had about a 3 or 4 hour window between prejudging and the night show.
Okay. Wow. Crazy. Yeah.
No, man.
It's so weird now because it's always in, you know, it's in Vegas every year, except for the last couple of years, it's been in Orlando, but usually it's in Vegas every year. They have the hotel. But back then, people may not realize it, but they were moving it every year. It was like sometimes it was in Europe. Sometimes it was the United States. Yep. And it was
always moving around.
Place. Yeah. Yeah.
I think this was the best scene for all of them. And you know, coming here was you know, last minute. They had to do the same thing this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was, I went this year, I didn't go to the show. I just went to the athletes venue and all that stuff, man. It was, it was pretty interesting. A lot of people, the stage set up and the seating and all that. It wasn't really.
Yeah.
The atmosphere wasn't the way I thought it should have been, but you know, they still pulled it off, man.
What did you think of the results from that 92 Olympia? What did you think of the guys?
You know, you everybody has their opinion on that, right, John? I mean, as you know, I thought I should have placed higher.
You think Dorian should have won?
I thought for sure that Kevin Lavroni was going to beat him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. I thought because Kevin had placed second there.
Yeah, he took second.
And I thought he was going to beat him, but I was happy for Dorian. I think he's a great guy. He was obviously came in way better from the year prior. I mean, this guy dialed in and all of a sudden it was like everybody wanted Dorian after that, man.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you think of Sean Ray and Lee Labrada?
Lee Labrada was a class act, man.
Yeah.
Surely one of the best bodybuilders in the world too at the time.
Yeah.
Ray, as much as sometimes he just had a mouth of the South, man. I think there were some times that he probably should have won the Olympia or he had the chance to win it.
Yeah.
He had physique. I did like Sean's physique, man. I thought he had a really classic looking physique that flowed, man. He had really good lines.
Do you think he deserved fourth that year?
Sorry?
Do you think he deserved fourth that year? Because he was really ripped that year.
Hard to say. I'd have to go back and look. I think he probably could have gone up, but again, you know, you're being judged by a bunch of people and very subjective in a lot of ways. I think a lot of those placements could have gone either way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like myself, I thought I should have placed, you know, top 10. It would have been nice to be there, but.
Yeah. But you beat Lou Ferrigno, so that was.
That's why I'm still known as the giant killer.
Right. So tell me about Ben Aziza. You saw him that year. He got fifth. What'd you think of how he looked at the Olympia?
I mean, his physique was mind-boggling.
Really? Okay.
Mind-boggling. I mean, he took it to another level, man.
Yeah.
The mass that that man had, I'll never forget having conversations with him, and he would tell me that everything he was taking that he would keep a diary on, that he was actually, he was giving a lot of this information to some of the doctors in Paris where he lived, in France.
Okay.
He was letting them know how they function because a lot of these doctors didn't know a lot about them and how they work. Hmm. And he, I guess Mohammed Momo, he was so good at putting his stuff together, but also keep in mind, not only was he on massive amounts of steroids, he was taking massive amounts of diuretics also.
Yeah.
So
was he your height, Steve?
Momo was about an inch and a half shorter than me, man.
Okay. How tall was Momo?
He was 5'2"-ish.
5'2".
I'm 5'4", because he was shorter than me, man.
Wow, unbelievable. So he was taking a lot of stuff, and he was telling you what he was taking?
He didn't tell me what he was taking. He said he was taking a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
There was a couple of things, and I forget to this day. Obviously, probably no different from some of the stuff the guys were using back then, but you know, other things too. There's so many different things you could have taken back then, man. All kinds of testosterone, Parabol, and Winstrol. I mean, just so many different types of drugs. And I still didn't even know most of them, man. And experimented only a little bit, man. But my safest drug was Winstrol. Mm-hmm. I didn't use a lot of testosterone. I didn't want to have gynecomastia.
Yeah.
And I did a little bit of that. I did a lot more. My go-to was Winstrol. Because I react really easy to it. So, and again, you know, back in those days, I got a 30cc bottle of Winstrol, you know, lasts me a month.
Right.
I do a cc a day, and that's a $300 bottle back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and like I said, I would use two or three of those before a contest, and that was it. So I didn't really use anything else.
Didn't need a lot of money, right, yeah.
And I didn't, that's why I was okay with that. And knowing that, to continue competing, that I knew in the back of my mind even in 92 on the European tour and all that stuff, that I had to up it a little bit to just, you know, to have a little more of an advantage. And even though I thought, you know, here I am still one of the top in the world, to make it, everybody wants to win. So to make it a little higher, I knew I had to take some more, man.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I saw Momo was 88 and the Olympia, and he was thick then, but he got so much bigger by 92 in that 4 years.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Massive.
So tell me about that Grand Prix tour. Now, you went on the Grand Prix tour, you were on every show, and you got to, you know, you unfortunately got to see Momo pass away at that show. So how did it go going through all those competitions? Because from what I read that he was getting progressively harder each show, you know.
Each show, John was transforming himself. For each contest, he just kept getting tighter and tighter. And you could see his cheeks sunken in.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
You could see his eyes a little bit are like, he almost ghostly at times. And, you know, we'd go to these shows and I'd be in some room with him sometime. And, and he had his girlfriend there sometimes too. But I had to leave because Momo was very aggressive. A lot of people don't know that side of him that I saw. And I don't, may his soul rest in peace for me. I don't want to get too much into it, but he was an aggressive in one way. And it was hard to be with him sometimes when his girlfriend was around because she was kind of like trying to help him and he wasn't. And I could tell that he was being taken over in a lot of ways as you know, when you do steroids, there's a lot of guys who can do steroids and it'll just, you get a little more aggressive to some degree. And I could see some of that coming out in him a bit. You know, I kind of tried to talk to him a little bit here and there, but he just kept getting tighter and tighter every show. And I knew that he was taking diuretics like crazy. And you could just see his skin was so transparent, man.
Wow.
And when we're at the, by the time we got to the Netherlands, I forget the city we were in.
So let me interrupt you, Steve. Do you think he was on these diuretics all the time? How many weeks was that Grand Prix after the Olympia?
About 3 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks.
Okay. And it was like, what, 4 shows, I think?
We had the Olympia plus 5 shows.
5 shows? Okay.
5 shows in 3 weeks. I mean, that's crazy.
So you think that from the Olympia all the way through – all these shows, he was just on diuretics all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because he was. That's what I read some magazine reports and some people who said that the people that saw him at every one of these Grand Prix, they said he was just getting harder and harder and harder. They said by the last show, he was like concrete. He was so hard.
He was rock hard, man. That last show, I ended up placing fourth, I think.
Yeah.
I wish I remember the city we were in, man, but. There was one contest, I forget where we were, where I kind of collapsed on stage, John, because I had cramped up like crazy and I had taken some diuretics and I took only couple days before each show, man. And the one thing that affected me with the diuretics was my legs, and I could feel them right away tighten up. But there was one contest where I kind of collapsed, wasn't during a couple of, call outs and pre-judging. And I kind of walk back and I just get down on my hands and knees because I'm trying to breathe. And it's like, I'm exhausted. I can feel my legs tightening up. But I looked at the audience all looking back. And Wayne D'Amelio's asking me if I'm okay, I think, something like that. And I stood up and I was fine. But
did you take them a couple days before the show, Steve?
Yeah, I would take, I think it was a day and a half, 2 days before a contest, I would take. Just a small amount to try to tighten up, man, and get that harder look, you know?
Yeah.
Why in that 92, when I was progressing in 92 also, and each show getting better, obviously, because I was still climbing the ladder, I could see some difference in myself also. But, you know, I did well in a lot of those shows. But, you know, Momo had won, I think, 2 or 3 of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And when he won the Netherlands one, that's when I saw everything happen after that, man.
Wow. So tell me about that night. You guys were at the hotel, and this was after the show, right? After the final Grand Prix. Was it the last one?
Yep. So we were at the show. Momo won it. And we're all backstage and he's sitting down just on a bench or something like that. And, you know, I'm asking if he's okay. He goes, yeah, yeah. So
was he running off stage during the prejudging, throwing up? Because that was another thing I heard. I heard he was vomiting a lot.
He did. Matter of fact, that's right. Thanks for remembering that, man.
Yeah.
He had gone off a couple times. I don't remember if it was every show or one or two. I remember him going off stage, puking and coming back. And I don't know.
Now he's losing more electrolytes, you know.
Yeah, and we don't know what was going on when he kept walking off stage or something like that. But from what I remember, since you brought that up, he didn't have to go get sick. But then the show was over, and then we're backstage, and we got to get into a van, a big van, to go to where we are in our hotel, which is like 45 minutes away.
Right.
And we're in a hotel, John, in the middle of Timbuktu, man. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Small little town in the Netherlands. So here we are going outside. We're all getting dressed, showered up, man, waiting in the van, and we're waiting for Momo. So I go back. Let me go get him. I go back, and he's in the shower. So he's standing in the shower with his hands against the wall like this, his feet right out, looking down with the water beating down on him. And I'm yelling at him, Momo, Momo, you all right? And he looks over and he goes, yeah, Steve, I'm fine. So he comes out, gets dried off and stuff, but he sits down and he can't move.
Mm.
So, but I went and got some of the guys. I forget what happened. Yeah, it was me. Some of us got some of the guys, came back over here inside the venue and picked him up and basically dragged them to the van.
Oh, my God. Wow.
He wasn't even hardly taking any steps. We were just
couldn't move anything. Yeah.
So, like, we're all looking at him. I'm thinking, okay, he's just got to get some water. He's drinking water. He's going to be okay. So we go to the hotel and we go to the restaurant. Of course, the restaurant has this big spread for us. I mean, massive spread.
Now the shows are all over, right? This is the last show.
We're all at the hotel partying, man. We're just eating food, having a couple beers, some of us, whatever. Right?
Was he drinking fluid then?
He was drinking some fluids and he did eat some food from what I remember.
Okay.
But the one thing I'll never forget, John, is I think it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And 2 or 3 in the morning, and we all got to get up 6 or 7 to go catch our flights to all our own countries, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I see Momo sitting in a chair over there in the restaurant, and I said, I got to go, guys. I'm out of here. I'm going to get some rest before I get up and fly out, man. And so I walk by him, and he's sitting in the chair like this, his head back, and I put my hand on his shoulder. I said, Momo, you okay? Excuse me, I'm speaking to him in French. I said, you all right, buddy? And he looks at me, and he looked at me, John, and the look in his eyes is what caught me off guard, man.
Hmm.
I look at him, and I said, Momo, you don't look right, man. He goes, I'm okay. His eyes were sunken in.
Oh, my God. He
looked really, really sick. Yeah. And something, I said, Momo, you come on, let's take you to the hotel. He goes, I'm fine. I'm gonna go up in a bit. All right. So I go and I hit the sack and I'm out. I don't think it was not even an hour later, I'm banging on my door and I open the door. It's Thierry Pastel. And he's going, see, Momo, 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 come in. Thierry also was French. He didn't speak English. So
yeah, yeah.
And so we go, I run into there, get my shorts on.
Thierry staying in the room with him?
Well, we all had our own room as bodybuilders.
Oh, he had our own room. Okay.
So I run over to the room where he is, and inside, so he's on the ground, and Al Q Gurley is trying to perform CPR on him. And immediately I run next door because I know where Porter is. I bang on his door. Porter, you know, he's paramedic,
right?
Fireman, you know, and so he comes over and Porter starts performing proper CPR. And he's giving him mouth to mouth, pumping his chest, and unbeknownst to us that apparently an ambulance had come or doctors had come prior to that night to see him.
Oh, really?
And said he was okay. Are you going to be fine? Give him some liquids or something. And they left. So as this happened after that, Porter's performing CPR on him. Now, you got to see what happened here, man. As he's doing this, he is performing CPR for the better part of 30, 40 minutes. because that's how far away these guys were, the ambulance.
Yeah, because you guys were in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere. So as I'm looking down, John, I'm looking down at Porter, and Porter's performing CPR, giving a mouth pump, and going and going. And Porter, there was that one moment, he turns his head, he looks up at me, he just gave me a look, and him and I are the only ones that knew that he was gone.
Mm.
But him being a professional, he had to continue performing CPR. He could not stop.
Yeah.
I mean, Porter was amazing. I was absolutely amazed at what he was doing. And Porter and Momo didn't get along. They didn't talk to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Porter tried to talk to him a little bit. Momo would always kind of brush him off. I mean, I thought it was kind of rude sometimes, but
yeah.
Well, it's just the way it was, man. And Momo never meant anything personal by it, though. But here you are, Porter, here giving CPR to this guy. And all of a sudden, the guys get there with the gurney and put him on the gurney. Now, as they're putting him on the gurney to take him downstairs, they didn't even have the pump in his mouth or anything. And they're trying to, and they had to go down the spiral staircase with Momo strapped on this gurney.
Oh, man.
And we're following behind trying to see what's going on. And Momo's head is bopping there. It's like they take him in the ambulance and then they take off. And Porter and I look at each other. And we both together started walking around the building. And both of us together walking around that building, we had tears in our eyes, man.
Hmm. Wow.
As we were walking away, everybody was thinking, oh, good, everything's going to be okay. And we're looking at each other, him and I. We didn't say anything because he knew not to say anything until it was official.
Yeah.
And so we're there and we get a call, I think, not even an hour later. And they got off the phone, said he didn't make it.
Hmm.
So everybody starts breaking down in the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So they took us all to the hospital. And Porter's the one that came over and closed his eyes, man. Like, we had the hospital. His eyes were still open while he was passed away. And,
wow.
And don't forget that. He just came over and just
closed his eyes. The paramedics, when they got him from the room, they didn't tell him. They didn't tell you guys that he was dead.
Told us nothing.
Yeah, but he was probably gone right then.
Porter knew and I knew. Porter told just because the way Porter was just exhibiting what was going on here.
Yeah.
And the way he looked at me, and after that, and when he went into the ambulance, I felt it. I knew right there. It was kind of common sense. I think everybody else felt, or maybe they're okay, he's gonna be okay. Where, you know, they felt like, okay, there's a miracle, he's gonna be fine, whatever, man. But it wasn't like that. Porter and I both knew when they got the call.
Yeah.
You know, everybody broke down. We all, you know, Porter and I were the ones that knew that was going on then. And then so we went to the hospital, and then at that night, it's the morning now. We're all getting ready to go. And at that time I said, hey, everybody's standing around, judges were there and everything. Hey guys, I just forgot how I mentioned it, but I went around or stood up and said, some guys, I'm done. I'm not competing anymore.
Hmm. No kidding.
All these guys were shocked. Judges were looking at me. A couple came over and talked to me. And I had a couple calls after that by some people and some athletes. And who was it that called me? I forget who it was that said, look, Steve, you still got what it takes, man. You know, don't let this get you. You need to come back, man. You're a big draw in bodybuilding. You know, you're doing well. So, I thought I had other things waiting for me. I didn't need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out of the sport.
Wow. It ain't no one else did that, right? Just you?
Nope, just me, man.
Yeah. How was the feeling among all the competitors? Because I know I've always heard there's been a lot of close calls with diuretics. You know, guys get taken to the hospital. Well, I think that year the next year, I think at the Arnold, there was some issues with Matarazzo and stuff. But
yep.
How did all the competitors feel? This is the first time someone actually died. A competitor.
I didn't get a chance after that, John, during the time that happened to Momo, in the hotel, you know, we're all there talking back and forth. Everybody's just saying what they got to say, you know, and
yeah,
giving their thoughts and stuff like that, man. But some people made it kind of a big thing, but I know that Wayne D'Amelio got some death threats after that from his family.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he being an Algerian guy.
Yeah.
He was from Algiers, and I guess they had some family members who just found how to get a hold of Wayne or something. And then I heard that he had some death threats from his family. And
wow.
And, you know, after that in 92, I went to judge in 93, I think it was. Yeah, I judged in 93. In Niagara Falls was my first show. I judged.
You got into judging.
I got into judging for the 1 year. That's where Lee Priest made his first contest. And that's what I called Lee Priest out for his first call out ever, man.
Oh, no kidding, huh?
Yeah, and they were calling him up on stage, the judges. There's a new guy there. I see this guy. He looks pretty damn good. So I'm like, my turn to bring a call out. So I said, I'm bringing Lee Priest up.
Yeah.
And I brought him up. All of a sudden, he went climbing up.
Yeah.
He placed in the top three, I think, or fourth place in that show, Niagara. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but Lee Priest, that's when he started making a name, man, after that. So I got out of it after that, man. I just decided in 93 I didn't want to judge anymore, and I lost contact with everything bodybuilding for years.
Yeah. And I think after that incident, that's when Wayne DeMille said, we're going to start testing for diuretics.
Yeah, and then they got away from that.
Yeah, they stopped doing that, yeah.
They only did that for a short period of time, right?
Right, yeah.
And then so they got away from that, which was a mistake. And now, as you know, look what's happening all over the place.
Yeah, now there's some deaths that are probably attributed to that, right?
Oh, gosh. I don't doubt that at all. I mean, come on. Some of the top bodybuilders in the world passing. I mean, they're just gone just like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
And even on the amateur, and the amateurs also, you know.
And they, both amateurs and professionals. I mean, say it's some type of epidemic. I mean, what the hell's going on here, man?
Yeah.
Somebody's.
Yeah, this last year was crazy with the deaths.
They got to take diuretics out. As far as I'm concerned, they got to eliminate these altogether.
Yeah, yeah. Did you feel like they really helped you, Steve, when you took them?
I felt they made a difference, yes. There's no doubt. But what I go to find, what happened, though, I know for a fact, John, that there was other ways of doing it. I had done prior to that other ways of staying tight without using diuretics. I did use a lot of natural types of diuretics, herbal types that work really well. So there was no need to go there. But as you know, diuretic work so darn quick, man. You take that sucking water out of there, crazy, man. And you know, there's a fine when you take them. You got to take them right, man. But there's got to be a way to get rid of them. I mean, I look at some of the girls today. The girls are tighter and harder than we were back in our day.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think they're playing Russian roulette.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, there's no reason to have that in the sport anymore. Although the people in the audience may want that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to have it. I think they'll have a way better looking athlete without them.
Yeah.
You have safer athletes, for crying out loud, man.
Yeah. 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 I had this funny story. I was in, when I competed in the Natural Olympia, I was in Greece, and we went to Hungary first. So they had me at a guest posing, me and another guy. And they had us at a guest posing in Hungary for 4 days. And then from there, we flew to Greece. So while we were in Hungary, we were eating at restaurants a lot. And we were eating like rice and chicken and stuff. So there's sodium, of course, in that. And so when I guest posed on Thursday, I'd been really in great shape before I left for Europe. Okay. And I asked my friend, who was a photographer, I said, how'd I look? And he's like, you're holding a little water. I'm like, oh, no. You know, the show's in 2 days. I trained so hard for the show. So for the next 2 days, I went out and bought all my food. And luckily, I had a George Foreman grill, and I was cooking everything in my hotel room. And I was cooking like potatoes and my beef and everything. And all I ate was just regular food. I didn't go to a restaurant food. And I remember the night before, we were staying in this little dinky. I was in this little hotel room in Greece. And I was starving. And I hadn't eaten. I hadn't drank anything for like a day and a half. And I remember I had a can of protein powder because one of the appearances we did in Hungary, they gave us a jar of protein, you know, as a thank you for making an appearance at the store. So I opened it up and it was chocolate, and I was licking my finger and I was going like this for like 20 minutes, you know. I was just like, I was going insane because I was starving, you know. But luckily I got into shape the next day and I was ripped. And when I got home, I was telling this guy from the gym who was an NPC competitor, who did drugs, obviously. And I was telling him the story of this ordeal I went through. And he goes, man, if that would have been me, I would have just popped a diuretic.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't have had to worry about anything. I wouldn't have starved myself, wouldn't have had to dehydrate, nothing, you know.
I heard stories over the years about some of the guys going through that. Some of the guys I had competed with, and I'm not going to name any names, but just going out, eating whatever the heck they wanted, getting really good shape for a contest, but just eating whatever and popping diuretics like crazy.
That's exactly what he said. He said he would carb up for a show, and then you pop the diuretic, get rid of the water, and then you're ready.
Yeah. It's such a dangerous practice, man.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Steve, I want to thank you for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. It was really great to hear your story and your career. I remember you competing for sure, and I thought you were a great athlete. And man, you got to be, you made history for being the first bantamweight to win an overall national championship. That's amazing. Right. That's an amazing story.
I'm honored, man. I'm honored that you had me on, man. It's a pleasure talking with you, man. You're a legend in your own. In your own, along the lines, man. I mean, come on, everybody knows you there.
Thank you, I appreciate it. What are you doing now, Steve?
Right now, I'm consulting people and helping. I specialize in plant based, as you know, talked about a little bit on the last week.
Yeah,
I do a lot of integrative wellness, just combining a lot of different things with people. I still do a little bit of people ask me some bodybuilding stuff on the side, and I don't mind helping them out.
Okay.
But I'm just back into the field that I like, man, just helping people get to a good place. And bodybuilding is going to kind of play a role in that a little bit. I've got a couple of guys that want me to come and talk to them about some stuff and routines and that. So, enjoying it. But for me, I love teaching people how to take care of themselves on a balanced level, integrative wellness level, with combining all this stuff, proper eating, training, mindfulness. To me, that makes, you know, it makes you an overall better balanced person. And with that, you can compete as a competitive athlete also, as long as you just take care of yourself right as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you look good. You look healthy. So I wish you the best on all your endeavors. And it was great talking to you again, Steve. It was really
appreciate it, John. And we'll have to get together soon since we're not far away, man.
Yeah, for sure. All right, buddy. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, brother. Appreciate it, man.
Okay. Take care. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Sri Brisbois for sitting down and talking with me. It was a really entertaining interview we had with Steve, and I finally got a chance to meet him after all these years. So thank you, Steve. I want to thank all our Patreon sponsors for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. You guys support the show with your donations every month, and I really could not do this show without you. So thank you very much. As we come to another end of the year of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And if you guys want to email me, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. Without any further ado, I want to read this article. And this comes from the July 1969 issue of Muscle Builder Magazine. It is about the 1968 IFBB Mr. Universe contest in Miami Beach, Florida. The name of the article is called The Tale of the Comet. It said the big show in New York had just been presented. It was as if the Super Bowl had just been played. How could anything follow the Mr. Olympia? But something did. The IFBB Mr. Universe for 1968 by Dick Tyler. Joe Weider stopped his car in front of my hotel in New York. We had just spent another one of those night of nights watching the annual show of shows. It was now 3 a.m. and I was beat but inspired and already looking forward to next year. When are you leaving to go back home, said Joe. I thought tomorrow would be a good time, in the morning. No, said Joe. Huh? I said, no, I'm sending you to Miami. I thought for a minute he was joking. The IFBB Mr. Universe is being produced there next Saturday, and I want you to go there to help cover the events. You're kidding. Why should I kid? So I was going to Miami. I got out of the car and waved so long to Joe. Then almost automatically, I looked up at the walls of concrete and glass they called New York and wonder just what the fabled Miami would be like. I didn't have long to wonder, for in a few days, I was standing looking up at the walls of concrete and glass they call Miami. The big difference was that the place was loaded with many tons of sand, gallons of ocean water, and beautiful girls in bikinis. The only thing missing was the sun. During most of my stay there, it was, unfortunately, overcast and rain. Luckily, I didn't have time to waste worrying about the whereabouts of King Sol. The professional sports promoter Don Pope was recently appointed the IFBB director for Florida, and he was out to show everyone why he was the success he was. With his associates Milton Burke and Walt Framer, who headed such memorable TV shows as Strike It Rich, they arranged a publicity buildup that should be emulated by everyone who plans to put on a major event of this kind. The week before the contest was filled with press conferences, the shooting of new films, cocktail parties, live TV, rehearsals, briefings, interviews, you name it, and we had it. This was a major event, and it was being treated like one. All during the week, the contestants and officials arrived at the DuPont Plaza Hotel in downtown Miami, where we were staying. It got just so I could go to the lobby and wait around just to see the stars arrive. After Joe Weider, I'm the biggest fan of all. By the showtime, we had such men ready to compete as Kingsley Portier from the Bahamas, Jay Gonzalez from the Philippines, Mario Da Silva from Uruguay, Vic Downs and Mike Galea from Canada, Takeshi Kimura and Nobu Takamoto from Japan, Arnold Schwarzenegger from Austria, Roy Callender from England, Jose Donato Munez from Spain, Gainsford O'Brien from Venezuela, Frank Zane, Don Peters, Doug Betts, and John Allen from the United States, and Pierre Vandensteen from Belgium. This was just some of those who were ready to compete for the Mr. Universe title. It was no wonder then that we were all excited by the evening of the contest. On top of that, the weather had cleared and the sky was sparkling diamonds on a blanket of black velvet. Palms swayed in the gentle ocean breeze, and the mood was reflected in the happy spirits of those arriving at the auditorium. The locale of the contest was the fabulous Miami Beach Auditorium, which is the same place that the great Jackie Gleason show is on. Early in the afternoon, there was a lengthy prejudging for both the Mr. Universe contest and the Miss Americana. After that, there was the final dress rehearsal, and now it was time for history to be written. Backstage, all was mayhem. Contestants, officials, cameramen, and newsmen were frantically going everywhere. It looked to me like there was almost too much disorder to ever be straightened out in time. To me, one of the more dramatic moments came when Sergio Oliva, Chuck Sipes, and Dave Draper all met Arnold Schwarzenegger for the first time earlier in the day. Here were probably four of the greatest bodybuilders of all time in one spot. They sized Arnold up in a friendly manner and came out with the verdict that he was an official phenomenon. Suddenly, wham, the show had begun. The former Olympic champion and movie Tarzan, Buster Crabbe, announced the contestants who came out one by one to be interviewed. I'm sure many in the audience who were seeing their first physique contests were surprised at how articulate a man with all those lumps could be. Each of the male contestants wore t-shirts, so the fans only got a hint of what they would see. At last, all the 24 Mr. Universe contestants had been interviewed, and the Miss Americana contestants were standing prettily around the vast stage. There was a giant backdrop with Mr. Universe painted on it, and the flags of the countries represented, flanked by the panorama. The IFBB President Ben Weider and IFBB Chief Joe Weider welcomed the audience and described the activities of the Federation. Interspersed through the show were some sensational acrobatic acts. The beauty contest began, and it was obvious to me that in spite of some stiff competition, Joe Nista's daughter Sandy, the current Miss Western America, had to win the Miss Americana title. She is one of the most beautiful young ladies I've ever met and the greatest advertisement I've ever seen on the values of training for the girls. Last year's Miss Americana, Christine Zane, Frank's wife, gave the crown to Sandy. Next, the audience was treated to Chuck Sipes' strength exhibition. I've seen this many times, but I never get tired of looking. Chuck is a living package of dynamite. By the time the Mr. Universe contest was to begin, we had seen a show and a half. Unfortunately, there was no posing dais and posing light. The contestants had to walk on and pick the spot they felt gave them the best advantage with the light and the audience view. It boiled down to two men, Zane and Schwarzenegger. Zane had come there to win. He never looked better in his life. He has size, shape, and cuts wrapped up in a golden bronze Florida tan. The audience went wild. If they went wild for Zane, they went nutty for Schwarzenegger. I've seldom seen such a monstrous man. Standing 6'2", weighing 250 pounds with 21.5-inch arms, 55-inch chest, 32-inch waist, 27-inch thighs, and 19-inch calves, it was no wonder that everyone was overpowered. Unfortunately, while Arnold had more than his share of size and shape, he lacked the definition to properly delineate his musculature. On top of that, he had no tan, which is a great compliment to big muscle.
Earlier, it had been decided for dramatic effect that only one winner would be proclaimed Mr. Universe, with the eight runners-up designated as ambassadors to the different planets in the solar system. I can't do that to you, though. I mean, you want to know how they place, right? Before the final decision, however, Dave Draper gave a posing exhibition to prove why he is one of the greatest in the world. As if that wasn't enough, Sergio Oliva literally cracked the cement in the auditorium when he showed them how the world's best developed man should look. To me, he is the greatest I've ever seen to date, and I've been around for a little while now. At last, the winners of the Mr. Universe were announced. Frank Zane was proclaimed the winner. Second, Ambassador to Mars was Arnold Schwarzenegger. Third, Ambassador to Mercury was Johnny Maldonado. Fourth, Ambassador to Jupiter was Don Peters. Fifth, Ambassador to Saturn was Pierre Vandenstein. Sixth, Ambassador to Uranus was Roy Callender. Seventh, Ambassador to Pluto was Vic Downs. And eighth, Ambassador to Neptune was Christopher Ford. In the subdivisions, best arms went to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Best chest went to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Best back went to Christopher Ford. Best abdominals went to Pierre Vandenstein. Best legs went to Frank Zane. And most muscular went to Johnny Maldonado. Unofficially, I was appointed the Ambassador to California, and I thought it was my time to visit my province and my waiting family. On the plane, I looked back on the memories of the night before. It was one of the best stage events I had ever seen. It had been filled with excitement, imagination, beautiful girls, and some of the best physiques and strongmen in the world. In 1970, I understand the IFBB will be putting on the Mr. Universe contest in Japan. Wow. If only Joe will, oh well, that's a couple of years from now. In the meantime, I can look at travel folders and dream. All right. Kind of a short article, but a little bit of an insight into the 1968 IFBB Mr. Universe. I think that's hilarious. They gave him to Ambassador to all the different planets. I thought he was joking when I first read that, but I guess they really did that. And they didn't have height classes, as he said. They just had one class with 24 competitors, and then he just announced the top eight guys. So Zane was first, Arnold was second, Johnny Maldonado third, Don Peters fourth, Pierre Vandenstein fifth, Roy Callender sixth. I thought Roy should have did much better. Vic Downs seventh, and Christopher Ford in eighth. And he was mentioning the 1970 Mr. Universe. That was actually held in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. That was the year Franco won the Mr. Universe contest. So very interesting. Could have been a little longer. I would have liked some more details, but that was the contest, of course, where Arnold made his debut in America, and he was very disappointed. If you heard our interview with Roy Callender, Roy was staying with Arnold that night. They stayed in the same hotel room, and Arnold was really, really mad that he lost to Frank Zane. And, of course, he got his revenge because he signed a contract with Joe Weider, and he stayed in the United States and never went back. And 1 year later, he looked fantastic, and he won the Mr. Universe contest in 1969. He got second to Sergio at the Olympia. And then, of course, the next year, 1970, he began his reign as the greatest bodybuilder ever and won his first Mr. Olympia title, and he won six in a row. And then, of course, came back and won that infamous 1980 Mr. Olympia. So a good article by Dick Tyler. Dick Tyler was a great writer. He wrote a few books also, if you guys are interested in checking out some of his writing. He wrote some good books on old school bodybuilding. You could probably get them up on Amazon. All right, guys, that is it for our show this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a very Merry Christmas this week. Happy holidays with all your friends and family. I hope everybody enjoys their holiday. And we will see you guys back next week for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Take care.